Welcome to The Word at First Pres. The sermon you're about to hear is not part of a regular sermon series. It stands on its own and can be instructive to our Christian faith in its own way, even though it's not linked to other sermons. I hope you enjoy.
It's time to do our first scripture reading, which comes from, bingo card please, the book of
Genesis.
Woo-woo! For good reason. I wish TC was here. It's more fun with him. Thus the heavens and the earth were finished in all their multitude, and on the seventh day God finished the work that he had done, and he rested on the seventh day from all the work that he had done. So God blessed the seventh day and hallowed it, because on it God rested from all the work that he had done in creation. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. Our second scripture reading comes from Matthew chapter 14, verses 19 to 23. So this is when he's talking to the 5,000. Then he ordered the crowds to sit down on the grass. Taking the 5 loaves and the 2 fish, he looked up to heaven and blessed and broke the loaves and gave them to the disciples. And the disciples gave them to the crowds. And all ate and were filled. And they took up what was left over of the broken pieces, 12 baskets full. And those who ate were about 5,000 men, besides women and children. Immediately he made the disciples get into the boat and go on ahead to the other side while he dismissed the crowds. And after he had dismissed the crowds, he went up the mountain by himself to pray. And when evening came, he was there alone. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks. So, how's everybody doing this morning? Doing okay? All right, well, today is the last time that I'm going to be preaching until September 11th, as I mentioned a little bit earlier. I'm going to be going on sabbatical for 3 months, and I thought it might behoove us to take a little bit of time this morning to talk about what you guys should keep in mind while I'm gone. Does that sound okay? All right. Before we jump into that, though, there is something that I want to address, which is something that many of you might actually be thinking this morning, or some of you might be thinking, which is A, what is a sabbatical? And B, what is it? Why does it mean you get to leave for 3 months and not be here? So that word, sabbatical, actually comes from what we read in Genesis. And, of course, that was the end of the creation story that's in Genesis chapters 1 and 2. That story, of course, is not a literal story. It's not how the earth was created. It was the way that the ancients understood the earth to be created at that point in time. But it's a beautiful story, right? God creates the earth in how many days? 6 days. And then, after 6 days of making the earth and making all the animals and making us, then God rests on the seventh day. And that word for rest in Hebrew is Shabbat. Shabbat, which of course we in English say it as what? Sabbath, right? And so tradition goes that this story is the reason why the Hebrew people ended up working for 6 days and then resting on the seventh day. And of course, this is based on a 7-day week, which of course is ubiquitous around the world. This is how everybody kind of operates, right, is 7 days. But I think it's interesting, when this story was written, the fact is that actually this was not ubiquitous. That in fact, there were all kinds of different lengths of the week. So yes, the Jews observed a 7-day week, but the Romans had an 8-day week. The Egyptians had a 10-day week. The Chinese had a 15-day week. So I think that shows you kind of how influential Judaism and Christianity have been, that now the entire world, everywhere around the world, we observe a 7-day week. And of course, in Judaism, that number 7 is actually really, really important. It is considered the number of perfection. It is the number of completion. And it's found all throughout the Bible. But for our purposes today, we're going to be talking about the number 7 as it relates to the sabbatical year. So I want to take a look at the scripture that has to do with the sabbatical year. Go ahead and bring it up. So it says, for 6 years, You shall sow your land and gather in its yield, but the seventh year you shall let it rest and lie fallow, so that the poor of your people may eat, and what they leave, the wild animals may eat. You shall do the same with your vineyard and with your olive orchard. All right, so this is called the sabbatical year. Now, obviously, what does this have to do with? This has to do with farming, does it not? Okay, and the reason why is because back in those days, this is not like today. So, modern world, we have things like irrigation. We can get water to any of our fields, right? We have pesticides and fertilizers. But back in those days, they didn't have those things. So what would happen is if you planted in the same field over and over and over again, you depleted the earth of its nutrients. Eventually, what would happen is, right, it would actually not be able to grow any longer. So what they would do is they had this idea that you should leave it open for a year. Now, there's no evidence they actually ever did this, because I want you to just consider something for a second, right? If you actually did it this way, what that would mean is 1 year you wouldn't plant anything. And so what would you have to do? What would you eat? You'd have to eat whatever you stored, right? And they didn't exactly have refrigeration back then, did they? So you were taking a big risk. More than likely what they did was that they, let's say you had a plot of land. You would divide it into seven parcels. One of those parcels would be barren, right? You wouldn't plant anything on it. And then the others would have stuff that you would plant. And then you would rotate. You would rotate the crops around, and then every year, a different part of your land would be fallow so that then it would allow it to kind of rejuvenate and replenish, right, and grow. I'm telling you this because this is where the idea comes from. But the concept of it is, if you're not planting anything in that seventh year, are you working in that seventh year? These people were farmers. This is what they did. So what did you get to do for the whole year? You got to just sit back and rest. That's assuming you had enough to actually make it through, right? So this is where the idea comes from. The idea that every 7 years, people and the earth need an extended rest. That's the concept. And so this concept of a Sabbath year has been built into the terms of call of pastors now for about the last 10 years. And the reason why is because the rate of burnout is so incredibly high. So, I've told you all this before, but in the Presbyterian church, the average amount of time a pastor remains in the church before leaving is 5 years. And what I mean by that is, it's not 5 years until the person's like, you know what, I think I'm going to go to a different church. I'm talking about 5 years, and they say, I'm leaving the church entirely for a completely different profession. And I want you to think about that for a second. Do you know what it takes to get here where I am? What you have to do this. So it's a bachelor's degree. You got to go through that. That's just a given, right? Then you got to go through 3 years of seminary. Then you got to pass all of the ordination exams that they give you. Not everybody is able to do that. And then you have to go through this entire arduous, horrible process that the Presbyterian Church puts you through so that you can eventually be ordained and be called reverend. So they go through all of that, everything that I went through, they go through all of that. And they get to 5 years and they're like, see you later, I'm done, after 5 years. Now I know what you're thinking. You're thinking, Alex, how hard could this job be? You work one day a week. Come on. You get up there, you say some stuff off the top of your head, right? Tell us to follow Jesus, and then you go home and eat bonbons and lay on your couch for the rest of the week. It's a great life. I don't even know what you are complaining about. If that is what you believe, the illusion has been successful, my friends. So, the truth is that I work an average of about 60 to 80 hours a week, on average. As the head of staff, I have to preach about 75% of the time. And when I preach, like this week, I work Sunday through Saturday. I never get a day off. And part of that is the reason, part of the reason why that happens is because of how I preach. So, you all probably know this, but I actually do memorize my sermon. What you're hearing right now is words that were written on a page that I actually took the time to write down, and I spend the time memorizing it. And memorizing it requires Thursday, Friday, Saturday. There are some people who can memorize in a single night. I do know some people who can do that. That is rare. For me, it takes multiple days to get to the point where I can do this without any notes. And I have had people sit there and say to me, Alex, you don't need to memorize your sermon. It's not necessary. You could just read it, right? And that's true. A lot of pastors do that. But the reason why I take the time to do this is not for me. It's for you. It's a much better experience for you when I can get up and I can just speak to you and it feels like we're having a conversation, yes? So that's part of the reason why it's done. Now, the sermon, of course, is what the vast majority of people who come in here see, right? Sunday morning, that's what you see. And it takes me about 20 to 80 hours to create a single sermon. It depends on what is being done on a Sunday. So there's the writing, there's the memorizing, there's all the slides that go into it. I got to create all those, right? If it's a video, like when I create movies, any video you see, I just need to say this so that you understand this. Any video you see up there, whenever we do it, I have edited that. Even if it's something that I didn't personally create, it has been re-edited by me for what we are doing here. So it always takes time to create it. And if it's something personal that I've made, that can take up to 80 hours to do all of that. So that's a lot of time that gets put in to just this part. And I wish I could say this was it, that this was all I did, but it's not. So there's a lot more to it. After church today, so I'll work all this morning, right, all the way up to 11:30, and then I get to go off with some of our elders who are wonderful volunteers, right? They come in and we're going to go up and we're going to have a meeting for about an hour and a half, right? We're going to sit there and we're going to spend time talking about the vision of the church. And then they say, go, Alex, you go implement the vision of the church, right? Which isn't really something I do personally, but I have to go to committee meetings. Oh, if you're Presbyterian, how do we love the committee meetings? And so basically, I go to at least two meetings a week here, usually at night. Right? And so what that means is that you guys know how you work a full day? You work a full day? Well, then you gotta go home, I eat quick, and then I come back, and we're here for a couple hours at night. And sometimes I'm here Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday night, multiple hours, sometimes till 8, 9 o'clock at night. And so that just goes, like every week we're doing that, plus I never get a day off during the week, right? So you just have to see how that can kind of build up. But that's not all I get to do. The other fun part is I get to fundraise my own salary. Do you know those guys out there on the street that, you know, are begging for change? I'm a like that guy. I'm the same person. I am a professional beggar. I get up here, I got a tie. That's the difference between me and that guy out on the street. I get a tie and I do it with a suit. But basically, I am fundraising my own salary and all the salaries of the staff here. And we have a very large staff at this church. And that, I'm going to be honest with you, is very stressful. It's very stressful to have to deal with that all the time, to think about, do we have enough money to make sure that we're going to make it from one month to the next. But not only that, but also, as the head of staff, I get to manage those people as well. So we come in, we manage the staff, we're all rowing in the same direction, and I don't just talk to them during the week. I also have you guys who come in and hang out. Sometimes you come in, we have conversations. Sometimes people come in for counseling. And I actually really do love doing that. That's a wonderful part of my job. I don't have a lot of time for it, but I do enjoy doing that. And then we have people who come in who we weren't expecting, homeless or near homeless individuals. I got a call on Friday from a woman, literally 2 days ago. There's a woman, her husband left her. She has two kids. She's about to get evicted from her apartment. She just got a new job so she can afford the apartment that she's living in. And she called me and she's like, can you help me? I'm 2 months behind. They're about to evict me from my house. So I was like, yeah, let's see what we can do. Let's see what we can make happen. People will call and do that. Then people call you up and they say, hey, my loved one died. Can you help us with a funeral? And thankfully, we have Judy here who does most of that. But sometimes they call. I did 7 funerals this past year. That's more funerals than I've ever done in my entire career because we had so many people die. We have weddings that happen. People call and do weddings. Those are joyous occasions. Those are fun to do. I enjoy those. And then we have to go visit people sometimes in the hospital or at their homes. And then we have programs during the week, and you got to plan for that. You got to do the teaching at those programs. And then on top of all of that, I need to make time to try to get to know you all and develop personal relationships with as many of you as I possibly can, because I don't just have one boss. I have hundreds of bosses. Every single one of you is my boss in this place because you contribute to my salary, and each of you has opinions about the quality of my work. You get to come in each week, sit down, right, for an hour, and you get to judge whether or not that 20 to 80 hours that I spent working on this is worth your time. You get to sit there and say, it wasn't for me. What are we doing for brunch today? Or, you know, I kind of like that. That was all right. That was good today, right? You get to come in, you get to judge that for yourself, and then move on with your life. And you wonder why it is that the average amount of time a pastor lasts in the church is 5 years. Just think about that for a second. 5 years. Now, I am going to be preaching a sermon in the fall where I think this is really interesting. A pastor is asked to do the job of 7 different people. 7 different people in any corporation or organization that you would come across. You would have individual people doing each one of these jobs that we are asked to do. You would hire a separate person for each of them. And yet we are asked to do all of these things, and we're asked to do them well. So, I point that out to you to say, I'm a little tired, and I need some time off. So, that's really what it comes down to. So Jesus, he understood this in a deep way. So what did we read this morning, right? We read after the feeding of the 5,000, what does Jesus end up doing? He goes off, and let's read it again. Immediately, he made the disciples get into the boat and go on ahead to the other side. So what does he do to this? I love this. We often just are like, we just kind of ignore this, right? What does he do? He's like, you know, you guys just go on ahead. I'll catch up. I'll see you guys in a little bit, right? While he dismissed the crowds. And after he had dismissed the crowds, he went up the mountain by himself to pray. And when evening came, he was there alone. So Jesus, he goes off to be by himself. He needs to be alone. He wants a Shabbat, a rest, right? Like, he's been around all these people. He leaves them behind, and he leaves his disciples behind. And he's like, hey, I'll see you guys later. I'm going to go off and be by myself. If you are part of any type of caring profession, if you are a pastor, a nurse, a doctor, a counselor, a teacher, you need these periods of rest. I hear oftentimes, and I'm sure you've heard this before, we got some teachers in here, right? Have you ever heard people say, oh, I wish I was a teacher, wish I got 3 months off in the summer, that would be really nice, right? All right, I'll put it to you this way. I have 2 boys. Raising my 2 guys with my wife is hard, right? I can't imagine having 20 plus kids in a classroom every day for 8 hours. And not only just having them there, but you have to impart information to them during that 8 hours. Now, you do that job for a year, right? You get to where we are right now, and you get to the end of that, and you're probably going to be like, yeah, man, I could use a 3-month break in the summer. That sounds really good, right? You need that, because if you don't have that, you're not going to be good for these kids when they come back, right? You need that time to rest and rejuvenate. Truthfully, I really feel like they should do that for nurses and doctors and these people who go out and really spend a great deal of time caring for other people, because it's a draining type of profession. It takes a lot to do it. It's not like other occupations where you can go do the job and come home. It's always a part of who you are in many ways. I've been a pastor, an ordained pastor, for about 13 years. I have been in the church for nearly 20, working in the church for 20. Do you know how long Jesus did his ministry? Do you know how long he did it? It depends on the gospel. It depends on which gospel you read, but it's anywhere from 1 to 3 years. So even though he was going all the time, which is true, he was when he did that. 1 to 3 years is manageable. But if you do compare that to me, I've either been doing it 7 times longer than Jesus or 20 times longer than Jesus. I just wanted to put that out there so that you realize that, right? So Jesus is maybe not our best example of doing this type of job over the long term. The people who are our best examples of this would be the guys who took over for him, right? So this is Peter, James, John, Paul. These guys, they were the ones who had to run the church over the long haul, so they'd have a different mentality. Let's take Paul as an example. So this is what Paul did. You can see he would go from city to city, and he would set up a new church. He'd set up a church there. He'd be there for like 6 months to a year, and then he'd keep traveling, and he'd keep going, right?
Now, if you were doing this today, you could get to those cities in hours. Do you know how long it took him to get to those cities? I mean, it was like weeks or months of travel to go from city to city. So he had a lot of built-in downtime, right? He could sit there just in the middle of kind of traveling and kind of get ready for the next thing that he was doing. The pace of life back then was way slower than what we do today, right? Today, by comparison, think about it. Like, the way we travel, it's instantaneous. And so everything we do in our society is just so much greater. So because we don't have these built-in downtimes, we have to create them for ourselves. Hence, the concept of a Sabbath, which is every 7 years, you give a pastor basically 3 months of time, which I want to say thank you. That's really, really a nice thing that you all are allowing me to do this. Now, technically, I was supposed to take this sabbatical in my 7th year here in 2020, but something happened, and I don't remember what it was, but it prevented me from being able to go. And after many waves of the pandemic, right, and after kind of going through everything that we have been through, we are now at a place where the world's a little more open. My whole family's had COVID, so it's great. We can just go over. We don't have to worry about it anymore, right? So this year, we're going to go make it happen. And I thought that I would like to take a little bit of time to give you a sense of what to expect over the next 3 months. So the first thing you need to know is my family's not even going to be here. We're not going to be around in this area. We're actually going to be over in the United Kingdom, and we're going to be over in Europe for the vast majority of that time. Now, because of that, and just so we're clear on this, when I'm over there, I'm actually deleting my email off my phone. I'm actually changing my phone number, too. So if you do try to get in contact with me, if somehow you were to manage to get in contact with me, I'm not going to respond to you anyway. And I don't mean that to sound harsh. Like, I just want you to understand. I don't mean that to sound harsh at all. But the fact is that I think about this place 24/7. Literally, there's never a time that I'm not thinking about the church. All the time. So if it's going to work that there's a rest, you have to detach. Like, truly detach. And I love all you guys. Like, I look forward to seeing you when I'm back. But while I'm there, I can't hear about it. Because then I'll start worrying about the church. And it's not going to function. It's not going to work well. So while I'm gone, Judy, Reverend Hockenberry, she's going to be the acting head of staff. And I've heard people say, can she do that? Yeah, she can do that. She was a head of staff for the vast majority of her career. This is the only time. This is her last time being a pastor. This is the only time in her career she's ever been an associate. So for most of her career, she's done exactly what I'm doing. So she's going to take over just fine. By the way, I'm not going to be in contact with Judy either. So you can't get a message to me through her, okay? That's not going to work either. So as the acting head of staff, she's got to preach 75% of the time, like I do. We are going to have some other people in here. Her husband, Ken, will preach. We'll have some pulpit supply. Who knows? Once word gets out that I'm gone, this place might fill up again. I'm telling you. That goes back to that whole thing about judging the quality of my work thing. There are people, by the way, who don't like the quality of my work, and who, when they hear that I'm not here anymore, they might sit there and say, First Prez, I'm back. And they'll be here until September 11th, and like, see you guys later. It's a fun summer. So while I'm gone, while I'm away, usually there's an expectation that the pastor is going to do some type of, you know, personal study. Usually the pastor does some kind of project while they're away. I've asked the session, the elders of the church, if I can continue working on a book that I've been writing. I have about 3 or 4 chapters left. You all may remember I published my first book in 2019. It's called Restorative Faith. That book, that took me like 4.5 years to write. I'm a little better now at writing books since then. I've learned a lot from it. But this new book is in the same vein. It's called Restorative Beauty. It's actually a book about spirituality, which I know is probably surprising to some of you, right? You're like, Alex, are you getting soft in your old age talking about spirituality? But it's exactly what you would think it would be, which is it's a book that's about spirituality for those who would consider themselves to be not spiritual. So that's the thrust of the book. So the goal is to finish that off, the main body of the text. When I come back in the fall, I'll finish up the academic notes, do the editing, and then hopefully it'll be ready for publishing in about 2023. I don't know if I'll get there. We're going to be traveling around a lot in Europe. I have a lot of plans of what we're going to do, so hopefully I'll have some time to really bang some of that out. But While I'm away, there's three things I need you to keep in mind, okay? The first thing is please, please, please do not leave this place for the summer, okay? Don't see it as, well, Alex is gone, and if he's not going to be here, I'm not going to be here, which I appreciate the camaraderie in that, but the fact is that Judy really does need your support, and I'm going to say this again because it is true. The church is not the pastors. The church is you guys, and if you guys aren't here, there is no church. So over the summer, you need to be here to be able to get to see each other, see your friends, right? But also, can you use the summer to like get to know some new people? I'm sure there's people in here you don't know. Take the time to get to know people that you don't know. And support Judy. You should come in and support her while she's here. And she needs that, okay? Second thing. Please continue your financial contributions to the church while I'm gone. I mentioned the fact that I am a professional beggar and I have to fundraise my own salary. It would be really horrible if I came back at the end of this sabbatical and then the session comes to me and they say, so we are in a major budget deficit since you left. Nobody's been giving while you're gone. That is going to be hugely stressful if I come back and that's the way things are. I hope that doesn't happen. Please, please, please keep giving so that when we come back to the fall, we're just right where we should be. We can take off and we can kind of go right into everything. And I want to say thank you ahead of time for doing that. The third thing, please be patient and understanding. The staff here, who is a great staff, we have an amazing staff at this church, are going to be working hard to keep everything running smoothly while I'm away. So you have to remember that we're used to operating with three pastors, and now we're going to be down to one while I'm gone. So Judy is going to have help at her disposal, but you have to remember there's only so much that help can do. Do you remember when Judy was on medical leave and we had that guy Steve Howery here for a period of time? Steve was a great guy, but there's only so much that I could hand him to do, because if somebody important in this congregation passes away, I can't be like, Steve, guess what? You're taking this funeral. No, it doesn't work that way, right? As a pastor, there's an expectation that I would do that. Otherwise, it's inappropriate, right? And so if there's a whole slew of deaths over the summer, she's going to be the one who has to take that on. She can't pass that off to anybody else. So you have to remember, she has to do that on top of everything else that she's doing here at the church. So my advice would be, please don't die over the summer if you're planning to. It would make things a lot easier for us. Just wait until the fall. When I'm back. So just be understanding and patient while I'm away. And finally, I just want to say thank you. I really, really do appreciate that you all allow me to take the time off to go to do this. It actually really is a privilege, because not many churches can afford to send their pastors away on sabbatical. It's just too much for them to be able to do. So we are in this great position that you all can allow this to happen. Thank you. As you know, I'll take lots of photos. You know, I'll take a lot of video too. When I come back, my first sermon is going to be all about what happened. And I'll have a little video put together. It'll be like you were there with me. Like you were there on the trip. And also, I hope that you all take to heart what I was talking about in this sermon, which is you all need some rest too. You need a Shabbat every once in a while. Take some time off for yourself. Rest, recharge. You need to do that. I hope that you have that plan for this summer. Take some time away, because the truth is, I want to come back in September. I want everybody to be ready to go so that we're going into a brand new year. And I look forward to seeing you guys then. I will be here, just so we're clear. Next week will be my last Sunday. I won't be preaching next week, so I will be here, because I don't want to come back and everybody's like, you're still here? Did you not go on your Sabbath? So I will be here next week. Next week is my last Sunday. Thank you again. Amen.
Thanks for listening. And if you want to learn more about First Presbyterian Church of Arlington Heights, please visit www.firstpresah.org for more information on service times, directions, and to learn more about the First Pres family of faith.